The following is a paid program.
The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is our Thursday edition of the show, and glad you are on board. We've got an hour of UK sports conversation coming up for you with Mike Pratt, Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated, and Gary Parrish from CBS, who lives in Memphis, so we'll, among other things, get his take on that crazy James Wiseman situation. That's our lineup for today as we roll on into the Wildcat News of the Day. It's a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group. That is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. I think the Kentucky loss to Evansville continues to dominate the discussion among the world of the BBN. Saw an interesting stat in Jerry Tipton's story in the Herald Leader today. I was a little surprised by this, actually. I think it was 63 home court losses, or 63 losses by number one ranked teams to unranked opponents. And of those, 32 occurred on home courts. Not many to mid-majors, obviously, which is the bigger issue here. And with that respect, Joe Lunardi was asked about how if that would hurt Kentucky as far as being a number one seed. He says they could still be a number one seed despite losing at home to Evansville. And he points out a Carolina team 2 years ago that lost at home to Wofford and still ended up as a two seed with 11 losses. So if they get it back on track, take care of business, it would help if Evansville turns out to be better than expected and the loss doesn't look quite as bad at the end of the season as it does now. They're preseason eighth in the Missouri Valley, but with a lot of new faces. Let's say they, you know, contend for the top spot in the Valley. Well, then it doesn't look as bad when you get to what their resume is like on Selection Sunday. But main thing is, forget all that kind of talk, is they just got to get their games on track and get rolling. And certainly history would suggest they will with Cal's teams. And I think at this point, the concerns out of not only just this game, but through the to this point in the season, one of them is the shooting. They have not shot it well. I continue to believe this will be a good three-point shooting team, but they are not providing any evidence to back that up right now. I think under 25% from three through three games. There were 4 of 17 the other night. And they need to be a better three-point shooting team than the last couple of teams were. They could get away with it a little bit because they had better low-post games. And Kentucky doesn't look like it's going to have that this year unless something changes. So they've got to find other ways. I always go back to that 2011 group that didn't really have a strong low post presence. They got some out of Terrence Jones there. I continue to hope they'll get some of that over time from E.J. Montgomery. But they were in Cal's best three-point shooting team. There are enough guys on here that should be able to shoot it in the mid to high 30s in terms of a percentage that should make them a good three-point shooting team, just like they should be a good free-throw shooting team with the guards getting to the line a lot. So we'll talk about some more of that as we move through the show today. Women's basketball, number 13, Kentucky, got a win last night over Stetson, 67-48. Ryan Howard got her game back on track. That's good to see. Figured it would happen, just sooner rather than later is always good. She had 24. Kiki McKinney had her first double-double with 10 and 10. And men's soccer, number 15, Kentucky, over Florida Atlantic 2-0 in the quarterfinals of the CUSA tournament. And they will face number one Marshall tomorrow, the number one seed, not number one in the country, but number one seed in the tournament, Marshall, tomorrow. Links to the stories that we talk about, you can find them on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Our show is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, locations in Hamburg and in Palomar. Cats are on the road this weekend, but maybe you've got a high school playoff game you're going to. Let Wild Eggs handle the catering, or you're inviting folks over to watch the game on Saturday down at Vanderbilt, having a watch party, let Wild Eggs do the catering. Give them a call. They'll hook you up. We'll be right back with Mike Pratt.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
14 after the top of the hour, it's our Thursday edition of the Leach Report. And that's when Mike Pratt always joins the program via the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. So, Mike, as you go through your went through your daily life yesterday and maybe this morning if you've been out and about, I'm guessing there's people have things they want to talk to you about, right?
Yeah, it's been an interesting conversation, Mr. Leach. Very interesting. And, of course, there's always the Chicken Little fans that think the sky is falling. And then there's always the very positive guys and gals and kids that go, you know, hey, we're going to be okay, right? Absolutely, we're going to be okay. I don't know what that means, but we're going to be okay, right?
Yeah, history, as I said earlier, tells us that Cal gets his teams to progress over the season and to be peaking in March. So I have no reason to doubt that will not happen with this team. But at this juncture, anything that came out of this game the other night, or even the first games you've seen so far, that is concerning relative to what you thought they had in the preseason?
Well, let me say this. Cal does his best work when he's got his black hat on, right? He loves to be the underdog, and he can even be the bad guy, perceived to be the bad guy. That's when he does his best work. And last year we saw it. It took, what, maybe middle of December? Actually, it took to Carolina, a W against Carolina, a W against Louisville to really get the team on track. But then they lost at Alabama, so it's going to take a while to get through this. It was an embarrassing loss. That was not the same team we saw in the first two games defensively. And when you're struggling offensively, and I've said this many times, we said it on air, coaches want a constant to be their defense, something they can rely on, that they can hang their hat on, and when they're not shooting the ball or not executing offensively, they fall back on their D. And I really thought that's what this team is going to be able to do. I really do. They didn't do it the other night against Evansville. They outside of Quickly, you know, they all were pretty much sleepwalking. And you can't bring your A game, and not play defense.
I thought Evansville did a nice job of isolating good matchups. A lot of them were on Nate Sestina, so he's going to have to figure out a way to or they'll figure out a way to help him guard people who are smaller, faster than he is, because that situation will obviously happen again. But the way Evansville attacked them by spreading the court and then attacking them off the drive was very effective.
I thought McCarty's game plan was excellent. And I said this on the broadcast to you, I thought they stayed with it when many teams in those situations, Rupp Arena playing Kentucky, the number one team at the time, would get away from the game plan. They did not get away from it.
That's a good point.
They stayed with it, and they spread the floor. Now, if Kentucky's playing the defense that they played in the first two games, then you don't have those situations quite as often. You will have them, but, I mean, they just wore some situations out that I think if you're – putting more pressure on the ball, if you're handling the pick and pop, or if you're handling the swing of the ball better than we did, as they did in the first two games. I mean, they handled that very well. So by not being able to play good team defense, you exposed a lot of things that typically aren't exposed. And that's what you fear. I mean, that's why you play team defense, not totally, I got mine, who do you have, right?
Yeah, as Calipari always tells them, you know, I'm guarding my man is not a good defense for a team defensive breakdown. What about the three-point shooting? I know we both thought that this is going to be a good, one of the better three-point shooting teams that he's had. It hasn't been so far, but it's a small sample size. Are you concerned at all about that?
Yeah, I mean, the offense is evolving, okay? got to figure out how to get more from Whitney and Brooks. And the shooting, if you can, here's my theory, and I could be crazy off on this one, but if you got guys who can get to the paint off the bounce, they're going to pull the defense in and give better looks to people on the perimeter. But to get into the paint off the bounce, you have to be able to finish at the rim. If they don't think you can finish at the rim as you're driving down through there, or there's such a great shot blocker, they're not going to give up on the outside shooters. They're going to say, okay, have at it. If you can't score that in some form or fashion, then we're not going to worry about the shooters. Well, I swear, Tom, it had to be at minimum of 6, maybe 8 shots, point blank at the rim, missed by Kentucky the other night. I mean, they just weren't there. I mean, that's the only way. Now, are you concerned it will happen again? Yeah, absolutely. That was a very ugly scenario, and you don't want it to happen again. But I think that we'll see improved three-point shooting. I hope my theory's right. The better, the little runners in the lane, finishing at the hoop, those things all count. I mean, I'd rather have 2 than nothing. We had a bunch of nothings last Tuesday night.
I think certainly the first game we got a glimpse of what the best of Tyrese Maxey can look like, and he can build from there. And I think with Johnny Juzang, it's going to be his perimeter shooting. Brooks and Whitney. And Cal, the way he always approaches this is guys kind of get the chance to make the case, if you will, for what their games are going to be. And then at some point, he's like, okay, we've let you try some things your way. Here's how we need you to play. When that time comes, what will that look like, do you think, for Khalil and for Keon?
Well, I think that they have to be more aggressive. I think they have to be chasing all the rebounds, looking to get three-point plays the old-fashioned way, and let the perimeter offense, Tom, work its way out. But, I mean, they did a lot of standing and watching. And then Brooks had some good shots, had some good looks, didn't go in. And I think it bothered him. It looked like, I could tell by the body language, he was disappointed. And you got to play through those misses. If you're getting good shots, Calipari's okay with that. All right, what's his great line is, you don't have to make them all, but you don't have to miss them all. Just, it's the quality of the shot. And I think both of them right now are a typical freshman. They hang their hat on their offense because that's the thing of beauty that they saw in high school. And when it's not working out, then, they kind of just stop playing. You got to play right through.
Yeah, Keon had a shot late where he, and this is something actually they had talked to him about at shoot-around. You know, if you're not making the three, move in and take a closer shot. And he did that, and he got to the elbow, and he short-armed it. And that's kind of speaking to kind of what you're seeing is just a guy who, you know, is a little lacking a little confidence right now.
Yeah, a real shooter says, you know, you look at Murray, look at Tyler Hero, look at Brandon Knight. Those guys could miss 6 in a row, man. It didn't bother them all. Dampier could miss 6 in a row. You know, he knows he's going to make 6 more as long as they're shots that they are shooting that are, you know, within what has been described for them. I mean, in their sweet spot. That's the key. And you can't let the miss bother you if you're taking good shots. And it typically happens to young players.
Mike Pratt joins us every Thursday, courtesy of Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. And on Twitter, you can follow him at MikePratt22. And I will see you on Monday night.
You got it, buddy. Have a good weekend. Bring us back a W.
And I will do my best. That's Mike Pratt as the show heads to a break here on the Leach Report Radio Network. Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. Coming up next, a little later, Gary Parrish from CBS Sports. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
It's the Leach Report Radio Network for a sunny, chilly Thursday. We go back to the Kentucky HempWorks.com hotline and bring in Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. We'll start on the basketball front since I imagine that's what's generating the most conversation. It's the most recent hot topic for the BBN. As you've gone back and looked about it, thought about it, Justin, any lingering concerns from either that game or the games that have been played before it as far as moving forward for this team?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's as bad as it's going to get for this team. I'm not saying that it's not going to be bad again, but, I mean, they clearly have to get better offensively. Some of that, I think, is just going to fix itself. You know, guys are going to find roles. There's going to be more of a flow. They will develop chemistry. Players will mature and understand situations better. What would concern me more is guys kind of missing point-blank shots, easy shots, lack of guys that are just consistent mid-range jumper makers, the lack of outside shooting. The concern for me is just personnel-wise, is it going to be a good offensive team? And I don't know the answer to that yet.
Well, it doesn't look like they're going to be a great inside scoring team like last year without PJ and Travis. So they're going to need to pick it up somewhere else. With the guards, it looks like they might be a team that gets to the line a lot. So they get a lot of points off free throws. But they're going to need to be a better outside shooting team than maybe the last couple, and they haven't been yet.
Yeah, I want to say 4 of 17 in this game, 6 mm-hmm. of 18, which is okay, against Michigan State, not very good in the first game. That's just Hagans has not established that he's going to knock down that shot, and that's going to dictate how teams play him, and that's going to dictate a lot for Kentucky offensively. And if he would start to knock down some of those, that would be helpful. Quickly has probably been their most consistent offensive player just because he gets to the line, he can knock down shots. He hasn't had really any bad games, but Maxey has been he's been hit or miss. He was really good against Michigan State. He struggled a lot in the second game. He was pretty good last night. But just in terms of winning that Evansville game, Maxey and Quickley needed to be the ones with the ball in their hands at the end of the game. And you could see the youth on display in terms of who was taking the shots and what kinds of shots they were taking down the stretch.
This is a game that, you know, hurts you from from your resume, but I did see Joe Lenardi comment from him that it wouldn't necessarily be fatal if you the thing that helps them is the SEC is strong. If they get it together and do well in the SEC, they're going to get plenty of opportunities for quality wins.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's helpful to talk about bracketology yet. I mean, for me, the concern would not be, does the Evansville loss eliminate this possibility, or does it make that impossible? It's what kind of team loses to Evansville at home, because we've played three games so far. We've got 27, 28 left in the regular season. A lot of the best Calipari teams simply would not have lost that game last night. So I'm less concerned with what it means for the resume now and more concerned with what kind of team it foreshadows Kentucky having.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a fair point. What you hope is that, I think as a fan, that they find a way to be the best they can be, if not one of the best that he's had, but just the best they can be, and hope that that's good enough in a, what the given year turns out to be of college basketball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I'm looking for a rosy way of interpreting it, you could tell pretty early on in that game that they were not locked in the way that they needed to be, and they could just never. Sometimes it's tough to shake that. 50-50 balls that this team, I think, is going to get against a lot of teams, when you look at their length and athleticism, they were falling between Kentucky players. They weren't quick to them. It seemed like it was one of those games where if it could have gone wrong, it was going to go wrong, and maybe it'll be the wake-up call that they need.
Yeah, one of those 50-50s was in the last minute with a kid from Evansville, Riley. I think there were three Kentucky guys that touched the rebound. He ends up with it right under the basket, scores, and it's back to five, and that was kind of the blow that they could not overcome. We're halfway home. More with Justin when we come right back.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Second half of our show, we are chatting with Justin Rowland from CatsIllustrated.com on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. Justin, we'll shift to football. The Tennessee game last week, did Tennessee come up with the plan to control Lynn Bowden, or was it part plan and part personnel?
I think a lot of it was personnel. I mean, there was one play that was third and short, and I just knew Bowden was going to stumble forward and drive forward for a first down. And Daniel Batuli just reached out with his left arm, I want to say, and ripped him down sideways to prevent him from reaching the first down. Batuli had like 19 tackles in that game, and you could just tell that individually they were on another level in terms of skill, athleticism, physicality compared to some of the teams that Kentucky's had more success with Bowden against.
Yeah, you think if you'd taken Josh Allen out of a couple of Kentucky games last season, what that impact would have been. But Tooley didn't play in those first two games that Tennessee lost, I think had an injury. And you can see the way he played the other night that that could be a significant impact not having him.
Yeah, and Kentucky ran a lot of plays, and they ran a lot of plays early in the game. And I guess I was impressed that Tennessee didn't wear down as the game went on. Some of that was because they kind of controlled the game second and third quarters. But, you know, Betulli was just a monster. That was one of the best individual defensive performances that I've seen from a player against Kentucky in a while, and I think he probably made the difference.
Kentucky was effective, obviously, moving the ball. Five times they got on Tennessee's side of the 50 after they took the 13-0 lead. Is it a case of the issue is the constricting of the field when you get closer to the goal line makes it more difficult for a pass-challenged offense to put it in the end zone?
I think so. And, you know, coaches know that explosive plays are one of the more telling signs, along with turnovers and in terms of, you know, who's going to be successful. And, you know, there's a big difference between a 35, 40-yard drive and a 75, 80-yard drive. Like, turning that solid drive into a great drive, you don't have much margin for error, especially if you don't have a passing game. If there's one tackle for loss, and I want to say Tennessee had six or more tackles for loss, you have a great drive. But if you get in a second and 12, you know, you're up against ropes. And I think when you don't have that added dimension to the pass game, those nice drives were unable to be converted into scoring drives.
Getting the two wide receivers back, assuming that happens, will be helpful. Wagner in particular, because it gives them an element in the passing game where they can throw it up to him, although I think he's only caught one ball at the time that Bowden's been quarterbacking.
Yeah, but just the threat of it, you know, to
right.
keep those safeties back and to keep them, you know, wondering whether they need to inch back. And I think the big thing is Kentucky's not going to face a defense close to as good as they saw from Tennessee. You know, Tennessee held their own against Alabama's offense. You know, they shut down Mississippi State. They handled South Carolina. That's a good defensive team right now. Just forget what happened at the beginning of the season. They have a good defense.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt's defense is horrendous. There's UT Martin, and Louisville's really struggled defensively. So I like the idea of sticking with Bowden, sticking with what you're doing, who you've become, and just trust that the execution is going to be easier to come by against the next few opponents.
Chris Rodriguez ran the ball really well. Do you think he gets more, many more opportunities in this game?
I think so. You know, I think, honestly, I thought he looked faster. I thought he looked more explosive, more loose, easygoing, running against Tennessee. He just seemed to have an extra gear compared to how he was running earlier. You think of him as a between the tackles runner, and he had some juice. You know, he was a fast guy out there, and I was impressed by that. It seems like he's out of the doghouse from those fumbles earlier in the year. And he and Kavosiy Smoke, according to Pro Football Focus, graded out as their two best offensive players. So I think they will get more carries.
How's Bowden grading out?
It's just tough to say. I mean, that's one case where I don't think you can put too much stock in it because he's getting docked. He's getting knocked down in turn because of the passing. And that doesn't really do justice to his impact as a runner. You know, he's one of the leading rushers in FBS football over the past four-plus weeks since he took over at quarterback. And, you know, you would think his grade would be through the roof, but they're also knocking him down because they're grading him as a quarterback, as a passer as well, and that's just not who he is.
For some fans, the decision to punt on fourth and one at the 40 in the final minute of the first half was an issue. What was your take on that one?
I thought that they probably should have run the clock down to about 30 seconds and tried to convert because you're kind of splitting the difference there. If you don't get it, then Tennessee still has to go 30-plus yards with not much time left just to get a field goal attempt. And if you do get it, then you've still got a timeout and you've got a short field to try to make something happen. I didn't like trying to win the game with 13 points or resting on your laurels because it was clear Tennessee, the floodgates weren't going to open for their defense. I mean, I thought, you know, they could have tried to get points there, but I also understand that this was in character. You know, he's a conservative coach. He doesn't want to get too aggressive, and, you know, he didn't want to give up points at the end of the half.
They're just really hurt by how their kicking game, or I say the kicking game, it's the place kicking game, because everything
right.
else in special teams has been really solid. It's just the inability to not be able to. They were at the 32, I think, in the second half and had a fourth and six. You ought to be able to at least have enough trust to send your kicker out there in that situation. And it's, you know, and then you now missed extra points three times in the last two games. For the situation they're in, that's one of the worst things to have as an unreliable place kicker.
And in fairness to Stoops, you're not going to pass for the first down because you're not passing the ball. And, you know, they haven't been short yardage success-wise as good as they've been in previous years. So he's probably thinking that the odds aren't as good as others might have imagined.
No, that's all true. What about Vanderbilt? Any concerns with the matchup as far as you look at the matchups?
Yeah, I mean, Keyshawn Vaughn, the running back, is a great player. I mean, he's the kind of guy that even when the blocking isn't good, he can hit a home run. And their strategy against Kentucky is going to be what it was against Missouri. And that was just, let's try to play fundamentally sound defense and just play a field position game and trust that Vaughn is going to hit on a big play, which he did. And, you know, I think if Kentucky doesn't shoot itself in the foot, if they block and if they execute their run game, if they rush for 300 yards against Vanderbilt like they did against Tennessee, they're not going to have 13 points. I think they're going to have 30 points. And I think that'll be more than enough to win. But, you know, Keyshawn Vaughn is a player they have to account for.
At Rollin' Rivals on Twitter, CatsIllustrated.com. Justin, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up next, Gary Parrish from CBS Sports. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Quarter before the top of the hour. Gary Parrish from CBS is going to join us here in just a second. First, a caller on the line. Hello, John. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How you doing, Tom Leach?
I'm doing well, John. So are the Cats going to bounce back on Saturday down in Nashville?
We're going to win by 35 biggins on Saturday. Whoa. We're going to beat Virginia by 20 biggins in women's basketball.
35 over the Commodores.
Yes, and 20 over Virginia in women's basketball. I think Matt Hunter might score 30 points.
Well, she got 24 last night, so that's not bad. Is she your favorite player?
For this team, the best player for women's basketball for Kentucky, I say is Lee Wise and Pedro Hedges and Valerie Steele.
Oh, yeah, I remember that trio. That's when I was in school. I went to watch them play a lot. They were fantastic to watch. Who's your favorite player on this Kentucky football team, John?
For this season?
Yes, sir.
Who you say? Our senior, it's hard to pronounce his name, and also I can say Nick Richards, and we can say Montgomery, and our sophomore guards.
Okay, sounds good, John. Good to hear from you. Oh, what are you?
One more thing. We're going to win Monday night by 30 biggins.
30 biggins. So more in the football game than in the basketball game. All right, John. Thank you.
Welcome.
Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
That is John Short. 14 away from the top of the hour, welcoming Gary Parrish on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. We'll start, Gary, with a little bit about this James Wiseman situation, which I think has certainly captured the attention of college basketball fans. What's your I mean, you live there in Memphis, so what's your take on how Memphis is playing this?
It's not the way I would play it. It's not the way I've talked to any other college administrator or compliance official or college coach, frankly, and it's not the way they would play it either. Being defiant so publicly to the NCAA just normally doesn't work out for you. Because Memphis fans can argue the details if they want to, and trust me, they are, but this is an undeniable NCAA violation. You can argue intent because it is unusual in the sense that yes, it is a booster providing an impermissible benefit to a recruitable student athlete who ended up at the school for which that person is a booster. But it's different in the sense that the booster, in this case Penny Hardaway, at the time wasn't providing an impermissible benefit to try to get James Wiseman to the University of Memphis. He was just trying to get him to East High School to win a state championship. But you can also reasonably assume that him getting him to East High School, A, helped Penny Hardaway get the Memphis job, and B, helped him enroll James Wiseman at Memphis, as opposed to watch James Wiseman, if he just stayed in Nashville and never come to Memphis, maybe go to Kentucky. So it's complicated, unusual, but in most people's eyes, including the NCAA, a level one violation that has to be resolved in some way. And as I reported last night, Memphis and the NCAA and Wiseman's attorneys have been in contact this week, and they are working toward a resolution. What that's going to look like, I'm not sure. I've heard a wide range of possible punishments, but I will be surprised at this point if the season continues on its current trajectory. I would assume that at some point today or tomorrow, before everybody is expected to be back in court on Monday, I would assume that this is resolved in some way, a way that the NCAA can live with, and Memphis fans and James Wiseman will not probably love, but can live with and take all of the future risk off of the table. Because being just in defiant of the NCAA in this manner, you're really putting your program in a bad spot going forward.
If they end up with some kind of that resolution, and it's say some X number of games that he has to sit out relative to the amount of money involved, any game he played in, they're going to have to forfeit, right?
In theory, but everything is negotiable, and so
true.
Memphis could argue, and I don't know that it's a winning argument, but I know it is an argument that we were prepared to sit James Wiseman out. And he got a temporary restraining order that forced us to play him. Now, I don't believe it forced them to play him. I think you could have dressed him, let him go through warm-ups, and just set him on the bench. I think you could reasonably argue that a judge cannot tell a basketball coach who must be on a court and who must not be on a court. So as long as Memphis didn't rule him ineligible and just
chose not to play him.
Right. I think you can chalk it up to a coach's decision and be in the clear, but I'll let smarter people than I sort through that. But yes, in theory, they would have to forfeit their two wins. But again, everything is negotiable, and this is such a high-profile case that's getting so much national attention that I do fundamentally believe this. It is in everybody's best interest to get this resolved. Memphis is yes. James Wiseman's yes, but also the NCAA's, because what's fascinating to watch is that I genuinely believe 5 years ago, if this same situation happened, people around the country would be screaming that cheating Memphis program is cheating again. And yet, that's not really what people are doing right now, whether it's LeBron James, Stephen A. Smith, or almost every talking head on television, a column in the Washington Post, people are largely siding with Memphis. Not because they think a rule wasn't broken, but because they just are so anti-NCAA now that anybody fighting the NCAA is on the right side of this war. It's almost like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so Memphis, while clearly, at least in most people's eyes, benefiting from an impermissible benefit that helped, at least on some level, them enroll the number one prospect in the country, people are okay with it if it means somebody sticks it to the NCAA. I think the NCAA is smart enough to understand that now, and if they can resolve this and remove it as a storyline, it would benefit them as well.
Yeah, I was going to, Nick, follow up by saying, is this kind of a changing landscape in terms of how schools approach, you know, as opposed to, you know, cooperating with the NCAA and, you know, self-imposing penalties, et cetera? Are we moving in the other direction?
I think it could be. Now, again, I would say that the pattern of facts here are very unusual. Like, when is the next time you're going to have a grassroots coach who's a high school coach who also doubles as a booster for a university, providing money to a family to get them to change high schools, and then within a year that high school coach is going to be the head coach at a major Division I university and enroll the number one prospect in America? Like, this will likely never happen again. So the NCAA doesn't really have to worry about a precedent it's setting, because I don't think you'll ever have this pattern of facts again. It's an unusual situation. But to your point, I think it'll come down to what the punishment looks like. If it's 15 games, then it might be a message, don't mess with us. Would we tell you to hold somebody out or else? But if it's 4 games, then maybe the message is lawyer up, get loud, go public, and the NCAA will ultimately buckle. So I think what message this ultimately sends will be determined by the punishment that, that Memphis and James Wiseman have to endure.
Lastly, just one question on Kentucky's loss to Evansville. I think on the Euros podcast, you went back, found, I guess, the most comparable one was actually a Seth Greenberg Long Beach State team going into Allen Fieldhouse and beating a Kansas team by 15 back in the early 90s. I did look. That Kansas team ended up in the Final Four. So what's your take on Kentucky's loss?
Yeah, and that's a good point two. If, you know, you're a Kentucky fan, like, I know John after the game the other night said, hey, I've been doing this for a long time. These things happen. And he's true because you just referenced one, but it's very rare. Like this kind of thing doesn't happen often. You know, Kentucky, Evansville, I should say, was a 40-1 underdog at tip off. For context, Buster Douglas was a 42-1 underdog to Mike Tyson. That is widely regarded as one of the greatest upsets in American sports history. And Kentucky Evansville, at least from a betting perspective, almost matched it. So this was wild. And obviously nothing you or I or anybody else, John Calipari, expected. But it is not indicative of what Kentucky is as a team. I don't think it's indicative of what Evansville is a team. And I don't think it puts any limit on what John's team can be going forward. He if anything, it could be a real, tangible learning lesson. And for what it's worth, if you go to KenPom right now, Kentucky is still fifth and projected as to be the favorite in every game on its regular season schedule. So whatever you think about Kentucky Tuesday morning, I don't think you should change it too drastically after what happened on Tuesday night. This is still one of the very best basketball teams in the country. They just got some stuff to figure out.
You can see him on CBS Sports Network and read him at CBSSports.com. Gary Parrish, thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I'll see you.
We'll wrap up this edition of the show when we come right back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Donato sliced the Wildcat history. This day in 1998, Craig Yeast set a couple of receiving records for a single game. 16 catches for 269 yards in a win over Vanderbilt at Kroger Field. Birthdays, Jared Prickett, celebrating a birthday today. And Twani Beckham, who was just in town with Kentucky State, where he works now. So happy birthday to both of those guys. That's going to do it for this edition of the Leach Report. Coming up tomorrow, we'll get a little preview of Vandy. And then Mike DeCourcy is going to join us to talk college hoops in the second half of the show. So we'll see you then on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report Radio Network. Miss the show? Catch the podcast at TomLeachKY.com or on the iHeartRadio app.